Hello, everybody. This is Jack Albrecht from BobcatReport.com, and I am joined now by Dusty Thibodeau from WarhawkReport.com. Dusty, how are you, sir?
Doing good, man. How goes things over in the great state of Texas?
Man, we're good. We're good. New coaches. Everybody's happy. It's nice.
I don't know. I've been reading some things other than that I didn't think everybody was happy and jumping on board for this hire, but, you know, it's good to see a little bit of stability coming to the Sun Belt as we get ready for the hectic time of recruiting.
Oh, geez. I don't even know how many. I think we're at 19. We might be at 20. I'd have to look. But, you know, I also haven't had an opportunity really with the dead period in place to, you know, see what these guys' chops are. They did flip a safety from Virginia, you know, kind of a sight unseen. So we'll see how that works out. So how about you guys? Where y'all at?
I think we're sitting right now at 4 commitments, lost 2 over the weekend. Guys that just decided to reopen up their commitment probably will not be Warhawks again. I know a lot of times we see where guys will reopen their commitment and commit right back to where they were. Don't think that'll be the case here, but, you know, with Coach Viator coming in so late from McNeese State, it's really the staff is just trying to play catch-up, being behind the eight ball so much in the recruiting game, getting that late start, not being hired until the middle of December, right up against the Christmas break.
Feelings in Monroe about Viator? And did I say the name of your city correctly?
Yeah, you butchered it as always, but, you know, that's why you're banned in 48 states, including Louisiana.
Texas,
you know,
and Alaska,
I think a lot of people. What's that?
I said Texas and Alaska. That's all that's left for me.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I think a lot of people initially were not happy with the hire, saying, why did we go out and get a FCS coach from in-state, McNeese State? We had all these other guys that could have been the splashier hire. But at the same time, I think Viator has paid his dues at the FCS level because he's only coached at McNeese State other than the high school ranks. But his only collegiate job has been at McNeese State. And I think he's paid his dues and showed that he is ready to make that leap to FBS. Now, that's not to say that he was ready to go to an LSU, to go to, you know, a Texas, a big program. But I think coming into the Sun Belt Conference is about where he's ready to test the waters and see what he can do. It's a young, energetic staff that he assembled largely from his McNeese staff. So it'll be interesting to see how they adjust to the recruitment, to, you know, the Sun Belt Conference, the grind in, the grind out. Because really, you look at the Southland Conference where they're at, there's just not much parity amongst the teams. You have seen Houston, you have McNeese. Southeastern was good a couple of years ago, but that's really about it. In the Sun Belt, though, you look at it, coming into this past year, Georgia State, hands down, was the unanimous doormat of the league, and yet they finished 6-6, including beating Georgia Southern, to go to their first ever bowl game. So any given Saturday, you could see one through the bottom beat anybody in the Sun Belt, and I think that that's going to be their big adjustment, is whether or not they can handle that.
Well, I think we're both in agreement that the Sun Belt as a league has gotten better with the new 2 staff at ULM and Texas State. But it was almost like they said at Media Day. We should have just listened. They said
yeah, exactly.
Be better.
And, you know, it's come a long way from those inaugural years where it was North Texas and then everyone else. I mean, hands down, North Texas was the best team in the league for the first 3, 4, 5 years even. And then you finally started seeing everyone kind of catch up and contend for that title. So it's good to see a balanced league. You don't want it to where everyone's not wanting to win games like we've seen in the past where, you know, ULM, Texas State especially, it seems like every time they play, it's a battle of who wants to win it less than it is a matter of who wants to win it. And you really want to see that competition of those last-second field goals, you know, the last-second touchdowns, defensive stands, everything like that. because that's going to bring the national spotlight down to the Sun Belt Conference and make it a bigger, better place for us all.
Well, I mean, I don't think either of us can argue there was some excellent Sun Belt football this season. I mean, I watched probably more games that did not involve Texas State in the last year than I ever have, and that's because the quality was up. I didn't mind watching a random game between, you know, Arkansas State and Georgia Southern or something.
It was, but, you know, I think this league is still missing that marquee player. And we've seen it in the past where there was the Ryan Applins, the T.Y. Hiltons, go down the list. I mean, the league has had that marquee player that everyone focuses on. We haven't had that recently. You could say Freddie Knighton at Arkansas State, Matt Braitha at Georgia Southern, but they just haven't, to me, really gotten that same attention that those other guys were getting. So I think until that comes about again, the league is kind of stuck in a rut, which, don't get me wrong, I mean, the Sun Belt finished in the middle of the G5 mix for playoff money, so if that's the rut they're stuck in, there's definitely worse places they could be.
I completely agree with you on that, by the way. I was hoping Elijah McGuire would be a higher profile player this season as well, and that didn't really happen that way. But there's good football to be played here. I'm a little intrigued about what Coastal will bring to the table whenever they hop on board. Did you read the news out of Idaho about the talks that the Vandals might take a look at the Big Sky again?
Yeah, a lot of that comes from the Sun Belt hasn't really – they're still on the fence of whether or not the Vandals will stay in the league or not. That final vote on them, I believe, is March 10th or somewhere in the beginning part of March, where the Vandals could not be back in the belt for next year. And I'm really torn on a stance of that. Yes, they are a pain to get to, logistic-wise. It costs schools a lot of money to get out there to play a game. That's usually, and I put a big asterisk next to that, not a competitive game. With that said, I got to watch firsthand as Idaho ran all over the Warhawks and destroyed them. The good news is, me being the specialist, I got to see Austin Rico, which was fantastic. But they don't really add much to the league as a whole. So from that standpoint, cut the fat, do away with them. The flip side of that was when the Sun Belt was scrambling to try to get together teams in order to sponsor football, Idaho was one of the first ones to raise their hand and be all on board. With them kind of sticking their necks out for the league, you got to kind of respect them and honor them. And if they want to stay, you keep them. If not, you cut ties and everybody's happy.
I'm probably not the right person to say this since I cover a somewhat recent FBS move-up. But, hey, I've had enough of those in our lives now. I mean, with Georgia State finally getting out of mediocrity, which, you know, some of us are jealous of, and, you know, the rise of the two FCS teams that did join in Appalachian and Southern, I don't know if I want another FCS team. And, you know, we have a perfectly capable one in Idaho that just happens to be a pain in the rear once every 2 years to go get to. It's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah, I think if you keep them in for football, you almost have to add them for everything else. And then I know Denver didn't sponsor football, but you're really back in that same boat of having this school that really doesn't do much of anything. I think Denver was in the league for soccer, track, and basketball, and that was it. And so, yeah, they're a member, but they're not really a member, so people don't really have much interest in the games, even though it is a conference contest.
I think if they were, like, an outstanding football team that ran everybody over, we'd probably even like them less.
Yeah. My biggest concern, though, is if Idaho decides to drop down to FCS, that could set a precedent that it can happen and that you can be successful at it. And so then it makes me wonder if schools aren't going to start looking around saying, you know, they did it and they're still around, so maybe we can do it as well. And I think both of our schools would probably draw that interest and pretty much be in the same boat to drop back down to the Southland Conference. And that's not a knock against the Southland. I mean, I think that is definitely the SEC of the FCS ranks, but it's still not the glory days that everyone thinks it of in the 80s where it was great football. Now you have to worry about getting that playoff money and the bowl possibilities of FBS to really drive guys, to drive your program forward.
I walked into a sports bar yesterday to watch the FCS championship game. Yeah, really. And I live less than an hour away from Frisco, Texas, where the game was held. And I had to ask the bartender to turn it on, who had no idea what I was talking about. And then all of a sudden, half of a bar got very, very interested that there was football on yesterday. Otherwise, they wouldn't have known about it. So people bragging about FCS dominance and things like that, it really sounds great in theory, but I think it's really going to dwarf the excitement that a bowl brings, which brings me to my next point. I'm sure you remember the 2012 ULM team pretty well, don't you?
Yeah, I was around for that a little bit.
So I'm going to start talking to a few people that I know around the Sun Belt about their best league experience in recent memory. And that has to have been yours, because that was the year that the Warhawks rolled into Little Rock and beat Arkansas in overtime.
Yeah, I mean, that was a crazy start to the season where you had a bye to open up the season. So you already knew going into the year you were going to play 12 straight games, and that was going to be a drain, and it was a question of how healthy can you remain to stay competitive down the stretch. So then Arkansas has a squeaker in the first week over a random FCS team. I don't even remember who it was. And then they're able to go into Arkansas. And really, the Razorbacks, to their credit, for three quarters were – doing the normal, you know, P5 over the G5, business as normal. But then the thing that people forget about, there were a couple of head injuries in that game that allowed long periods of rest for the Warhawks, right when they were at their breaking point of fatigue, that allowed them to get refreshed and stay in the game. Additionally, they knocked out two of the Razorback quarterbacks, so they were down in their second week to a third-string quarterback. So it was the perfect storm for the upset. And as we saw as that season progressed, Arkansas was a train wreck just waiting to happen. So it was the perfect storm. What's that?
Arkansas was ranked eighth when the Warhawks beat them.
That is correct. But then I don't think that they won another two games that year. I mean, it was a bad year for the Razorbacks with Donnell Smith and his smile comments over and over replayed. But then you have that upset, and you knew looking at those first three games that you were going to have Arkansas, Auburn, then Baylor. So after the Arkansas win, you were definitely on cloud nine, but had to refocus knowing you were going against Gus Malzahn at Arkansas to try to – I mean, excuse me, at Auburn – to try to keep that momentum going, showing it wasn't just a fluke. And the Warhawks did it, though, in the fact that they were able to keep the game intact. There were really only two plays that made that game have to go to overtime, and that was right before the half, a Hail Mary that somehow five defensive backs for ULM don't jump to even try to contest the pass. And then additionally to that, the Tigers had to do a trick play where it was like a halfback, pitchback, reverse, everything else to get a first down, maybe even a touchdown. But they were resorting to way down the playbook and the trick plays to try. And that's almost the shoe on the other foot. You would expect that out of a ULM, a Texas State, or anyone like that when they're in an SEC opponent. The Warhawks
was that the season
a drive.
That the Warhawks played two quarterbacks in the same backfield?
That is correct. That was in week 3 against Baylor.
which I'm bringing up right now. How did Baylor wind up coming to play a home game for you guys?
Back in the day when Baylor sucked was the only way to describe it. They were desperate to fill schedule needs, and the AD at the time, Bobby Staub, was able to coordinate a home-and-home series with them, not knowing that, you know, they would be the Baylor that we all got to see with Bryce Petty and company. And it just worked out that they were that good and they were the Baylor team that we expected to see. The flip side of that people forget about, you know, everyone remembers that 2012 game. Everyone forgets in 2013 where at one point somebody from the ULM staff looked at the scoreboard and said, we got 15 more minutes of this, because it was like 70-0 going into the fourth quarter.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was very much a, I was looking for the power for the Xbox.
Wow. So the week after the Baylor game, they played in the Superdome against Tulane and pounded them.
Yes. A very bad Tulane team at the time.
And then the week after
and
that.
And that was a good game. That was a game where really you were able to see even more craziness that had happened the week, you know, in the season. You had a defensive touchdown where a defensive lineman had his hand up to try to just knock the pass down and somehow one-handed caught it and fell into the end zone. You had a true freshman that received a handoff. The line just parted, and off he went for a 70-yard touchdown. I mean, it was a craziness start to finish of that season.
ULM went on after the Tulane game to win 5 games in a row. They won at Middle Tennessee. They beat FAU at home. They beat Western Kentucky in a looks-to-be pretty crazy overtime game in Bowling Green. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I was standing right there when Rashawn Caesar went up for the two-point conversion. He was a true freshman, got thrown into the mix when somebody else went down, and, Warhawks were struggling through that game and able to come back late in the game. Once the offense again in the fourth quarter finally started clicking, rattled off the points, took it to overtime, and gambled on the two-pointer and won. And I remember Jonathan Dowling of Western Kentucky throwing the pylon at me, which was great. And, we all escaped injury, and off we went for another game.
And that next game was against South Alabama at home, and the Warhawks won 38-24. But the week after that, they played Louisiana Lafayette and lost 40-24. What do you remember about that?
That was the game that really was only a 8-point game in the fourth quarter. There were just a few seconds remaining in the game, and Mark Hudspeth sent out Terrence Broadway instead of the punter, but ULM didn't have a timeout to call to get the punt return team or defensive team on, so all they had was punt return. Lafayette actually called a timeout, and out of the timeout came out through the Hail Mary for the touchdown to run up the score. The ironic part, again, fast forward to 2013, with 3-4 seconds left, ULM calls a timeout to then have Colton Browning roll around in to throw a incomplete pass into the stands. So his final pass of his ULM career was an incomplete pass into the stands.
Wow. The week after that.
Which was a subtle message.
I kind of got you on there. So the week after that, the Warhawks went to Jonesboro to play Arkansas State, and the final score is 45-23, but it wasn't that close either, was it?
Not at all. Something about Jonesboro and the Warhawks just cannot win there. They have not won there under the Barry regime when he was head coach. They have not won at Arkansas State. Basketball is now 0-12, 0-13. At the Convocation Center. There's something about that place that is just hexed. I don't know if their Indian chief was more powerful than ULM's old Indian chief, but It's crazy.
I've been to a lot of the different markets in the Sun Belt, current and former, but I have never been to Jonesboro, Arkansas. I have no idea where that is even on a map.
It's about an hour west of Memphis, and it's not a bad little campus. The town used to be pretty podunk, but it has actually started growing and thriving around the university, which is always great to see. And I tell you, that town really supports Arkansas State. It really makes you see what you want out of your town, out of your program, as far as everyone rallying behind it and going for it.
Interestingly enough, Dusty, the next person I'm talking to is from Arkansas State, and I want them to talk to me about the last 5 years that they've had.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy.
The football program raises everything.
And it all started with them making a questionable move, in my opinion, when they fired Steve Robertson to get Hugh Freeze, that was offensive coordinator at the time. I did not think that was the right move at all. Steve Robertson had them go into their first ever bowl when they went to the New Orleans Bowl the year that it was held in Lafayette because of Hurricane Katrina. So, I mean, he had the program going in the right direction. They were contending for conference titles. They had several guys get drafted during that time, but then they made the move, and I think everyone was kind of scratching their head, but you look at it, and now you're just in awe that, you know, that was definitely the right move and paid off dividends for them. But really, their administration just said, you know what, that's the front porch to our university. We're actually going to fund it and make sure that everyone has a good look at what our university is and what they can do.
That's also one of the very few markets in the Sun Belt that I've noticed that is pretty positive about the Sun Belt. They like it. It seems like
it's
a bunch of teams trying to get out, and Arkansas State's like, we'll stay here and just keep beating everybody.
I mean, and I think that they've grown to accept that they're going to be in the Sun Belt, and they're just going to make the best of it and dominate it, which is the way to go. I know that the league is constantly living in fear that Lafayette is going to get picked up, but I just don't see anybody right now outside of maybe Georgia State, Appalachian State maybe, or even Texas State being really on anybody's radar of trying to get picked up. Because if you look at the last Conference USA expansion, they went with Louisiana Tech in rural Ruston, Louisiana, a place you cannot fly in or out of. You have to fly in or out of Shreveport or Monroe. Whereas Lafayette has a big enough airport that you can fly in and out of. They have right there along the major corridor of I-10, not too far from Houston, New Orleans, Baton Rouge, and everything else. They picked rural Ruston, Louisiana. If they pick that over you, you're probably never going into Conference USA.
I think the delusion of grandeur that Conference USA is that much better. I will tell you right now, whenever, you know, all of the Conference Olympics were going on, whenever it was, I was not thrilled that Texas State wound up in the Sun Belt. I was absolutely not thrilled with it. But now that I see there's good football to be played here, I don't mind some of these destinations. For instance, your town, for instance, I have fun when I go there. That doesn't bother me. I'm just never going to stay at the Holiday Inn Express in West Monroe again. But anyway, I'm getting off subject, so excuse me. The next week, that season, the Warhawks hosted North Texas, and they crushed them. And I believe that was the game that the Warhawks got bowl eligibility in, correct?
Yes, that was the magic six win of the season, or excuse me, that was the seven win that pretty much ensured that they were going to go to a bowl game. Obviously, at 6-6, you're eligible, but you're very much on the fence and iffy whether or not you can go. That seventh win ensured that they were a lock for a bowl game, just not knowing exactly where they were going.
And then the deal really got sealed whenever they went to Miami and beat FIU, correct?
Yeah, and you
there
know,
was no
I
way
I
they
keep
were leaving an 8-win team out.
but it happened. I mean, you look at Louisiana Tech, they fiddled around and with 9 wins didn't go because they didn't want to face ULM right down the street in Shreveport in the Independence Bowl. But rewinding back to that FIU game, to close out the season, it just capped off the craziness of the season. The Warhawks, with 30 seconds left, all they got to do is run victory to kneel out, run out the clock. Everybody's celebrating. They fumbled the snap, allowing FIU to run one more play. They fumbled victory, allowing FIU to then run a Hail Mary that goes for a touchdown. Warhawks win it in overtime.
I'm going to have to find video of that. That sounds terrible.
Yes.
So, at the end of the season, you were rewarded with a how far of a drive is it to Shreveport?
About an hour and a half, hour 45.
So, I've been to the Independence Bowl before a couple of times. How good of a turnout? I assume everybody traveled, right?
Yeah, it was a great bowl experience. I will say that was a very well-ran bowl. Having been to the New Orleans Bowl as well, covering it this past year, I still take the Independence Bowl. And I know everyone in the national media gives Shreveport a hard time. That's a fantastic bowl. It really is. It's what you make of it, like everything else in life. If you go there saying, God, we're in Shreveport, yeah, you're not going to have a good time. If you go out and see the glitz of the casinos, the lights, and everything else, you're going to have a fantastic time and then see a great football game there afterwards.
I just go to the Blind Tiger when I go there. I don't even think about going anywhere else.
It's scary.
Go ahead.
It's a restaurant side during the day. I mean, obviously it's a great bar at night, but it's a restaurant during the day. So we were there in town with the family. My daughter now wants to constantly tell everyone about how she went to the Blind Tiger. So I have to give that disclaimer that it is during lunch that she went.
So that season, the Warhawks wound up 8-5. A couple of rough years since then, but perhaps things are looking on the up and up now. What didn't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, just looking ahead to this year's schedule, the non-conference slate kicks off this year against Southern, which you got to figure is going to be a fantastic atmosphere for the game. And then it should be an easy win for the Warhawks to start off their tenure with a 1-0 record. The second week, you got to go to OU. Now, I know that they have some quarterback troubles, and they're going to have a young, inexperienced team. But Stoops is not going to be a fool, and he'll have his team ready to go in that one. Later in the year, they'll go back to Auburn for a game against the Tigers. It'll be interesting to see that because I think Auburn is really falling off the tracks again. It'll be interesting to see if Gus can get things going again. And then there's the start of a home-and-home series with New Mexico. It'll be at New Mexico this year with them coming back in 17.
And then, of course, we have the usual suspects in the Sun Belt. I'm not going to make any predictions on the Sun Belt anymore because obviously the guys at Media Day know more than I do. But go ahead.
You know, I think a team that really has it together, they didn't lose too much from this year, and I think they'll still contend. Two teams, actually, I'll give you. I think Appalachian State has another year with Tyler Lamb, so I think that they're going to be another force to be reckoned with this year. And then I also think that Georgia State, we'll see them go to another 6-6, maybe even a 7-5 season this year, and go to another postseason bowl game.
Do they have somebody coming back besides? I mean, Arbuckle's done, right?
I believe he is, but they
don't
really lose much other than that, though.
Oh, well, then they have that outstanding freshman wide receiver and a bunch of young guys. And yeah, I can see them making noise next year. But, hey, you know what? It's a good time to be in the Sun Belt, isn't it?
It is. I mean, basketball's
kicking right now. Warhawks had a rough road swing through Arkansas where they dropped both games by a combined 4 points to Arkansas State and Little Rock. Little Rock to me is incredible. They're, I mean, sitting at like 13-1 right now. And I know that they really haven't played too many people on their schedule, but you still got to go out, play the game, and finish all the way through, and they've definitely been able to do that.
You know, something I forgot to ask you about. I forgot that the Warhawks closed the season with a victory this year.
That is correct. That has not happened in a while. Able to come back and beat New Mexico State. The crazy stat line in that was Brian Williams, a guy that was recruited and signed as a quarterback, moved to receiver. But with injuries to the starting quarterbacks, he was moved back to quarterback for basically two practices, then thrown into action in that New Mexico State game. First three passes, three touchdowns.
That's magical.
And it was you just sat there looking at it going, did that really just happen?
It's a crazy sport. It's a crazy game. It's a crazy time. And that's about it for today. So Dusty, who is probably one of the last two human beings that have seen me get sick in public, and I once spent, what, about 25 hours in the car together?
It didn't feel like it. Yeah, we did have a good cross-country trek to the good old Atlanta by way of Tuscaloosa. Where else did we stop on that way? Auburn and somewhere else along the way.
We went to Oxford, right?
No, we went to Tuscaloosa.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I have magnets from all of my travels on the fridge there. So anyway, Dusty's good people. I've known him for a while. He's definitely going to be open to a adult beverage the next time that you see him in San Marcos, which will probably be the year after next. And that'll do it for me. Dusty, anything for the crowd?
No, just be sure to check us out for all things Warhawks. And also on Twitter, we throw in some Sunbelt stuff at Warhawk Report.
He is at ulm.rivals.com or at warhawkreport.com. And Bobcat Report is at texasstate.rivals.com or at bobcatreport.com. So on behalf of Dusty and the entire publishing team here at Bobcat Report, ha ha ha, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Take care.